The stretch by Mars in the pitch. Swung on and hit the right field. That's way back there. Way back there. Hold on! Tigers win! Tigers win!
At the plate. Throw back to Scheffler, gets away towards the dugout. Here comes Bianco! Tigers win! Tigers win!
My first interaction with Ryan Clark was an interesting one. And I'm telling you this story that I haven't even told Ryan, but I think it's illustrative. The first interaction I can remember having with Ryan was regarding one of our hype videos. If you remember, back in 2018, before the Alabama game, we made a hype video, and Ryan was the narrator, and this was before the hype video craze of 2019, but we reached out to Ryan, he helped us, I wrote the script, and he read it. Turned out great, it was a great video.
We coming! And we ain't backing down.
Well, at some point after that, I think it was as the hype video craze was reaching its peak in 2019, Ryan was doing his weekly radio spot with Matt Moscone on 104.5 ESPN here in Baton Rouge. And he started making fun of the script to that video. And he basically said how the video was written by some white dude at LSU, and he had to change it because it was so proper and written like it was written by an English major, which I used to be, by the way.
This is ridiculous, man. Like, I don't know what I got to do. I mean, it was, bro.
Let's get to the Arkansas game.
What other hype
money
video?
In the bank.
What other hype video actually made ESPN?
No, I know.
Granted, I'm ESPN.
Yeah, for
sure. I worked there. But it was because it was excellent.
It was excellent. The We Coming, I mean, we ain't backing down.
And you think the white guy that writes all of these things, you think Cody wrote it that way? No.
Did Cody write it? Cody writes it?
Cody
writes it.
You know, you think he wrote it that way?
No.
You know how he wrote that. We are coming.
We're coming.
And we are not backing down.
Right. I know.
That was how I was supposed to read it. I was supposed to say, we are coming. And our plan is to not back down for any reason whatsoever. But I didn't read it like that. And now I see we coming everywhere.
I laughed. I thought it was funny because it was funny. And part of me was also kind of offended. Like I can be two things at once, right? I can think something's funny and think it's true, and then also it kind of hits a part of me that kind of hurts. And I kind of wrestled with those emotions for a little while. And I think my perception of Ryan was that he was kind of mean, right? Like if someone made fun of your work, even if you saw the legitimacy in it, you might think they were kind of mean. Well, eventually I got over myself and moved on into a position where I worked with Ryan in a different context. And I've gotten to know Ryan a lot better in the months since. And you'll hear about some of the work that Ryan and I have done together, not on this podcast, but maybe in future things that come out from LSU. And what I've learned about Ryan is that he is the most honest, straightforward, and transparent human being I've ever met. And I've come to love that about Ryan, because there aren't enough people like that in the world. There aren't enough people that will tell you what you need to hear. Ryan was right about my script. He's right about a lot of my writing, and you'll hear him joke about that because we just did a big project together that hopefully we'll release soon here from LSU, and my writing was convoluted and way overwritten, sort of like this intro to this podcast is way overspoken. That's just what I do. I use too many words. But Ryan is that force for me creatively sometimes. He tells me what I need to hear. And Ryan has made a living doing that now on ESPN, being the transparent, honest, sometimes unfiltered personality on ESPN. But if Ryan says it, you can bet he believes it. He is not going to lie. He is going to be honest with you. And to me, that's an invaluable characteristic. It's a characteristic we need more of in the world, where people will tell you one thing to your face and another behind your back. Give me somebody who tells me the unvarnished truth, whether I like it or not, over somebody who dodges the truth with me any day of the week. I want the person that I can trust. And Ryan is somebody whose opinion I trust and I don't always agree with. Trust me, I've disagreed with Ryan before. He certainly disagreed with me. but I trust his opinion and I trust his intentions. This conversation today with Ryan is mostly about his broadcasting career. He just got a contract extension from ESPN. If you don't know by now, Tigers Win is where I talk to the experts that are all around me every day, the world-class athletes, the world-class broadcasters and coaches and athletes, and I steal their ideas for how to be successful and how to win and try to apply them to my own life. And what I'll steal from Ryan is honesty and transparency and following your gut and trusting your gut. I won't steal all of Ryan's opinions because I don't agree with all of them. I don't expect you to either. In fact, there's some that you may disagree with. And maybe, like me, you had a perception of Ryan before hearing this conversation or from a previous interaction that wasn't positive or that had a negative tone to it. I hope you leave this conversation open to the idea that two people can disagree on a certain topic, but if they're speaking honestly and empathetically toward each other, they can be productive and they can learn from each other. So, with that long intro done, enjoy my long conversation with former LSU safety, current ESPN broadcaster, and just an all-around very, very good guy, Ryan Clark. All right, back with another episode of Tigers Win. Happy to welcome Ryan Clark to the show. Ryan, thank you for your time. Thank you for coming out here. Good timing. I was thinking I'd made a list of people that I wanted to get on this podcast, and I kind of told you what this show's about. Quickly, not to bore the listeners, because I always say this, but it's about success and about winning, and you know the things that you learn in sports that then you apply to your life, and you're kind of the perfect example of that. And so yesterday the news comes out that you got a new contract at ESPN. Mm-hmm. Today we got you on the show, so good timing.
Right.
So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Second of all, what was your reaction once this all got finalized and announced and some of the feedback you've gotten?
Yeah, well, you know, man, it's one of those things. So this is my fourth contract with them. So I had one while I played, then once I retired, then 2 years ago. 2 years ago, ESPN was going through a lot of cuts. You know, a lot of people laid off, amazing people at their jobs who lost their careers and their jobs at ESPN. So we didn't really do all of this. This is also the first time I kind of really went into free agency, to be honest, where I, you know, spoke with other networks and got offers from other networks. And it's one of those cool deals where it's free agency and everybody isn't trying to lowball you and tell you why they can't give you money.
Yeah.
That's what football felt like for me. Yeah. Like every time it came up in football, I was like, man, just all year you were telling me how great I was, and now you're just saying to me, well, Troy does all the hard stuff. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So like that's kind of, you know, what it was. But this was different.
No salary cap.
Yeah, no salary cap. And too, on the other side of it too, people kind of understanding your worth in a business for me that I don't really understand in that manner, mm-hmm. right? Because it's so subjective,
mm-hmm.
right? You could watch me on TV and think I'm good, or you can be someone from a team that I don't necessarily think is very good, and you'll think I'm awful
yeah.
because all I ever say is that your team stinks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was good to get it, and you know I've known for a couple of days now. I will say this. One of the things, it was obviously great to get a lot of love, especially from colleagues, you know, dudes like Marcus,
mm-hmm.
but Marcus already knew. You know, we had
yeah.
been talking about
yeah.
it forever.
Yeah.
But I got some DMs and some text messages from dudes who still play, you know, and they were like, hey, man, you deserve it. Like, you're the best at it. Like, you're the realest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was important to me.
Yeah.
Because in the end, those people know, right? They're still in it. They're still living it. And if I get up there and I'm saying things that are off base, or if I'm saying things that don't make sense to them, or if I'm critiquing people in a way that they don't think is cool, they let me know.
Yeah.
So to have that type of feedback was good.
It's really obvious when, you know, especially in this industry, when you are BSing and when you are playing favorites. I figured that out working here, because in my old job, you know, LSU wasn't paying my check, so I could say whatever I wanted to. And so now I have to be a little bit more thoughtful about what I say and how I say it. And so it's very, very, like, I could come on these podcasts. I have two other ones, you know, a football podcast, a basketball podcast, and Pump Sunshine. Nobody wants to hear that, right? And I bet NFL players are the same way, right? Like, they don't want to hear you, like, talking about how great the Steelers are all the time, because then your opinion is no longer valid. If you're not being critical when it's time to be critical, then your praise means nothing when it's time to praise, right? You have to have some validity in what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's easier, right? It's like, if I did college sports, I'd probably be bad. I'd be worse at my job.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad I don't do college sports.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it has to be, I would imagine, for people who truly cover the sport, when you have relationships with people, it's more difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, it's more difficult for me talking about Mike Tomlin and taking away my bias and our friendship when it comes to evaluating the job that he's doing.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I do it well. I think other times I am definitely softer in my opinion and my approach when it comes to him, because he's my friend. Like, I'm honest enough to be able to say that. I think when it comes to players, you know, it's easier because you just talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just say, hey, man, like, I got to do a piece on you today, or you're going to come up in the conversation today. Here's what I think.
Yeah.
But a lot of times you've already had those conversations. And so the hardest part is looking at the job, understanding what your job is, and making sure people know you work at it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I'm not up until 3 o'clock Sunday mornings because I'm trying to watch every single game or rewatch every single game that I have to talk about on Get Up, and then I get up on the show the next morning, no pun intended, I get up and I'm on the show and I'm just talking out of my head, mm-hmm. and I can't give you certain plays, or I can't give you certain statistics or certain situational football moments, and I'm wrong, then you can call me on that.
Yep.
But if I'm telling you, you didn't play well, it was 2 minutes and 41 seconds, it was opportunity to make a play, such and such didn't make it, this is where the game changed, you can't dispute that.
Yep.
You know that. And so that's what's important to me. It's about doing the work.
And so that gets at it's something that I think fits the theme of this podcast. It's being self-critical. And, you know, when you are critical of an athlete, of a performance, I would imagine the great athletes, first of all, they're probably not listening. Second of all, they're more self-critical of themselves. So I've found that, like, when I'm talking about a certain athlete, you know, I'll say, oh, he did this right. And then I'll be talking to them after. They'll be like, man, like, I did not play well. Like, this is what so they tend to be more self-critical. And so applying that to what you do, and you learn that as a player, right? You learn to watch film and see the things that you were doing wrong. How valuable has that skill set been coming into this industry where you have to be self-critical, you have to be the guy that says, you know what, I could go to bed right now, or I could stay up and actually do the work like I did as a player, so that I'm prepared just like I was in the game, I'm prepared for the TV moment tomorrow?
Yeah, well, I think people are who they are, though, right? When, you know, I was an undrafted free agent, I was cut. You know, I was put on practice squad. And so my work ethic was always a certain thing. But that didn't just start when I got to the league, right? When I was here, man, I'd work out with Moffitt. I always wanted freaking calves. I mm-hmm. thought having calves would be like the greatest thing ever. I still don't. But I would come in, man, I'd do like 500 calf raises a day. Like, yeah. I always wanted to get bigger. And I understood that Coach Moffitt was doing the things to make me a better football player.
Yeah.
But he wasn't necessarily trying to make me look better. And I wanted to look better. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that speed was something I had to work on. Bro, I don't know if you remember strength shoes. You might be a little bit too young.
Oh, yes. For Boots Garland strength shoes.
Right?
Absolutely. So, grew up on strength shoes.
Exactly. So I got like some hand-me-down strength shoes. And just a regular student that was here, we would jump the fence at the track, bro. Because he wanted to hoop in the rec. His name was Tuck. He just wanted to go hoop in the rec, and he wanted hops.
Wanted to dunk.
And he would go run with me.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if you know what a school for the deaf is,
uh-huh.
but I lived close to there.
Okay.
Like, I would jump the fence and get my quick foot ladder and go, just because I was always like that.
Yeah.
And so then you get into this business, and you kind of see it's different in this business, right? Because if you don't do all those things to make you physically better, if you're gifted enough, then you're okay. But like a guy like me, it was going to show on Saturday night or Sundays.
Yeah.
Whereas TV, it's not really the same thing, right? It's no wins and losses. And so there are different ways to approach it. What happened for me was, man, was watching, and like I said, it's subjective, so it's kind of stupid to feel this way, was watching people who I felt I did a better job than be praised differently than me, right? Like, that was the competition part mm-hmm. of it. It was seeing people get jobs and being like, I'm for sure better than dude. And mm-hmm. and it's not something you say outwardly, but you internalize
sure.
it. And your that competitor. Does, and that does make you more self-aware. That does make you more self-critical, where you say, okay, here are the things they like about him, right? How do I add that to my game but still stay me?
Yeah, that's being a competitor, right? That's what you learn as an athlete. You talked about your college days. This conversation is probably going to go all over the place. I'm just going to grab onto every tangent that I think of. It was a nice reminder yesterday when we put out the video from the football account. The first shot was you in your college uniform, and you held up the little piece of paper. And I was thinking about, we've talked about this before, but when I used to work at Tiger Rag, I used to always go through the archives and look at old stories and see if there was anything I could dig into or write about. And I found one from your senior day. And there was this whole story about you. I think it was before your senior day. Maybe you did a media session right before, and it may have been after. I can't remember. But you basically said, yeah, this is probably the last football game I'm ever going to play. And I remember reading that, and I'm like, you know, that was in 2000. Was that 2000? And, you know, I remember your playing days. I was young, but I remember your playing days at LSU. But mostly what I remember of Ryan Clark is Pittsburgh Steelers. Ryan Clark winning Super Bowls. Hey, that guy played at LSU. That's the guy in the NFL right now from LSU. And it was just so incompatible with my perception of you that last football game, like, this dude's about to play so many more football games, and he has no idea. So it was interesting seeing through that window. Take me back to that time of your life, into your time here at LSU, and you think, yeah, I'm probably not playing football anymore.
It was so. What was crazy was coming into that year, right? I was preseason, first team All SEC, Sporting News All America, like everything, mm-hmm. Thorpe Award list. And so I remember we weren't great in the secondary, and I remember trying to do everything. But I also remember, like, I can vividly remember trying to win the Thorpe Award every play,
mm-hmm.
right? I can vividly remember trying to improve my draft status every play for, like, the first 5-6 games. Nick Saban calls me into a meeting. We're in Kentucky, and he's like, RC, he's like, bro, he's like, I've never had a great player play so out of character. He's like, I've never seen it before. And I told him all the same things I told you. And he's like, look, Ryan, he's like, I've had more guys who could be middle round guys, late round guys who play forever just because of what they learn. He kind of explained those. He's like, just go be you. You know, and so the last few games of the season, or last half of the season, I play extremely well. But I was also very aware that I didn't play to the level I wanted to, or maybe the level you needed to take the next step.
Yeah.
And I just remember being really tired. You know, just from a standpoint of, like, all the things I told you I did extra, like, that was my life.
Yeah.
Right? And I remember feeling like, man, you did all those things, but still you didn't play at your best when you needed to be your best. And I thought to myself, well, maybe you just don't have it. And I think part of it, too, I never dreamed of really playing in the NFL. You know, like, I played football for that day. You know what I'm saying? The day we were trying to win the boot, that was the day I was playing football. The last year, I changed that, right? Like, I started looking to the future. I started wanting other things, and I just realized, I was like, you know what? That really ain't me.
Yeah.
And so when they asked me, I was like, yeah, this might be it.
Yeah.
You know, and if it was it, though, you know, I was comfortable with that.
So it wasn't it. You ended up having, you ended up having a very long and successful career. Undrafted, some of the things that you touched on earlier when you were kind of talking about the makeup that has gotten you to where you are as a broadcaster, where were those things developed in your personality, in your character? Were they from your childhood? The things that got you from, I don't think I'm going to play in the NFL, I didn't get drafted, and then that journey to, you know, being one of the best safeties and one of the best teams in the NFL?
You know what, man? It was, I just always been like this. When I was in eighth grade, I went to Archbishop Shaw. My parents worked, and I lived in Gretna. But so we practiced 2 times a week, and so, like, while I was going to ninth grade, I couldn't get there from Gretna. So my aunt lived a little closer, probably 2 or 3 miles away, and so my parents would let me go spend the night at her house mm-hmm. the days before practice. Me and my homeboy Andre, who I knew from before then, would ride our bikes from, you know, Woodmere, which was a few miles away, to Shaw to work out. And I knew I couldn't miss. I knew I needed to be early, and I knew no matter what the weather was, so if it was raining, man, if it was hot as hell, it didn't matter. Like, that's where we were. And then being in those environments, like, you just wanted to be the best.
Yeah.
And so for me, my thing was, was comfort, right? Like I always wanted to be comfortable. And I felt like if I did everything I possibly could to be the best I could, I'd at least be comfortable. And then what that turned into, Cody, was being comfortable with not winning, right? So when you're walking out of a stadium and Randy Moss just goes for 150, you know, and you start replaying those plays, you go, what play was I not expecting? What was I not prepared for? What did I not do throughout the week to have me in a position to make those plays? And if you can run through those plays, bro, and go, nope, I was aware every time. I was able to anticipate. I was there. Randy Moss was just better.
Yeah.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
What I couldn't live with was not doing what I was supposed to. And that started for me very young, and I understood that. And it was about the work. And, you know, life now I've learned too, though, bro. It's like about the journey, right? Like, yeah, I'm not going to lie. There was a lot of things that people posted yesterday, but seeing that post was different for me. And it was the way it started, right? Because that kid for sure didn't think that yesterday would be a part of his future. You know, like that kid didn't understand that, or that he'd be sitting trying to read some stuff that you wrote and be like saying and have to recall and make you remember.
Yeah.
Hey bro, I'm from the West Bank. Like, yeah. this is, you know.
Yeah.
And I think those, and like those moments make you look back at, you know, at being cut, make you look back at the article you mentioned, and you say, you know what? All those things put you in a position to where you're the keynote speaker at the Unity March. You know what I'm saying? To where LSU has an opportunity to talk about your contract extension. And so what you hope is that, you know, the journey continues, but you understand and respect where you've come from.
That's really refreshing to hear, because I definitely, me as a kid, as a young man growing up, as an athlete, was so destination focused, right? It was always about, like, you know, for me, it was, I want to play D1 basketball. I want to play for this. It was all about the brand, right? I want to be a D1 basketball player. And I was never focused on the journey. Now, I would certainly worked hard, because having a goal is important, right? Like, if you have that goal, that lofty goal, whatever it was for me, it was to play. I wanted to play basketball at Duke, right? And
so did I, actually. I think everybody did, bro.
I could sink in there. Who was your Duke team? Like, you're probably
Jay,
like,
Will's team.
Oh, I love Jay Will's team. That team was so good.
Me and Jay Will, bro, it's cool because we actually became very close.
Oh, nice.
Working together.
That's awesome.
And I remember one night, man, we're sitting at the Doubletree Hotel, which is where we stay at ESPN, and I was having a beer, and I had to just tell him. I was like, bro, you're like my favorite college basketball player of all time.
That team was so good, yeah.
You know, I said, no, I couldn't understand how you couldn't make freaking free throws, but you could sink 5 threes in the game. Yep. I was like, but dog, you were a dog.
Yeah, you're like a 65% free throw shooter.
Right.
Yeah, I love those Duke teams. But so for me, like, I was never going to play at Duke. It wasn't going to happen. I'm 6 foot tall, limited athleticism. Even with all the strength shoes that I did, I could like barely grab rim, you know? So,
right.
But having that high goal really took me further, right? And so setting lofty goals and having high expectations for yourself takes you further than you would have been if you set a low goal. But at the same time, for me, and I'm curious if what your experience is with this similar concept, being so goal focused, sometimes you lose sight of the little moments and the little journeys and the, you know, the junior year of high school basketball, and you're so focused on like, where am I getting to versus being where you are. And I feel like as I've gotten older, maybe it's just naturally, maybe it's having kids, maybe it's the woman I married, I've done a better job of kind of sinking into the moment, being where your feet are and enjoying that. But I'm curious for you, as somebody that, you know, like you've always been, in my head at least, my perception of you, somebody that's, all right, I'm going to take this step in my career, I'm going to take this step, and then I'm going to take this step, but also being able to sink in and say, you know what, like, here's where I am, and I'm going to enjoy this moment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, like we kind of talked about the journey and your experiences, like I almost died, you know what I'm saying? I had a doctor tell me, had you not called me on Friday, and this was Wednesday after my surgery, you wouldn't have made it through the weekend. You know, and so when you go through things like that, now you start to kind of understand, right? And so I remember when we won the Super Bowl, there's a picture of me like laying in the confetti, and I think it was Ed Werder comes up to me. He's like, "What are you feeling?" And I was like, "Man, I'm just relieved." You know, and people couldn't believe that. And then we're at the Super Bowl party, like everybody's partying, bro, and I'm just kind of like, because it was the year after I got sick. It was the same year one of my best friends, Sean Taylor, is shot in his home and died. And so now I'm looking at it like, man, if we keep focusing on getting to something, what if we never get there? right? Now you miss all this good that has happened on your journey to wherever it ends. You see, and so like that's kind of just the way I live. Like if you talk to me about the 2008 season, I can tell you about the tackle on the tight end from the Houston Texans in week one where he catches the quick slant and I take his legs from him. You know, I can tell you about flipping Kellen Winslow in week two in Cleveland. Like I can talk about all those things because so many of those things became important to me because it was just about that moment.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, for all of us, goals are important, right? Like you have to set a lofty goal. But what I've been trying to teach people and what I taught myself was you also want to check off the small ones, right? If it was playing at Duke, right, it also could be something simple like make every single summer workout.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. if you do that, it's like, you know what? I accomplished that.
Yeah.
And so now there are these little accomplishments that may get you to your ultimate goal, but at least you talk about winning and success. It's the success of that. It's the success of winning those small things that eventually build something big that you might not have been waiting on, just like the dude that you posted the picture of, you know, on the tweet yesterday
mm-hmm.
or on a social media post.
Mm-hmm.
Like that kid has had so many successes and so many different accomplishments that he didn't plan on.
So one of the things that you mentioned earlier is getting a contract in your playing career with ESPN to do TV. And I remember this. I remember you being on TV, still being a player, not understanding how that worked in my head at the time. Just being like, wait, he's still playing. How's he on ESPN? At what point did you realize and start making that transition in your head, I'm going to have to do something once I'm done with football and TV broadcast might be a way that I want to go? And then how did you sort of start positioning yourself for that?
I mean, I always like to talk. You know what I mean? Like if you ask any of my bitty basketball coaches, they all say, yeah, this is pretty much the perfect profession for you. It's probably a better one than football, actually. After I got sick, I couldn't play in Denver anymore because, you know, I would have a sickle cell crisis every time I played. But I wanted to, and I was trying to. And since I couldn't, one week I went on First Take and they interviewed me. So at the end, I was just like, hey, you guys should let me come on and debate one time.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought me in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they bring me in. It's the playoffs. So Sunday, we all watch the games together. I'm taking notes, right? Because I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I want to be good at it.
Yeah.
We go to the meeting the next morning. We're walking out. Skip Bayless, who was working on First Take at the time, stops everybody. And he goes, of any athlete, of any entertainer that's come in, you're the most prepared. You were the most engaged, like basically just saying good job, you know. And so because of that, they would invite me back often. I think it was like going into year 11 or 12, I was like, this is about to be over. Now, I was always kind of planning for it to mm-hmm. be over, but all I ever wanted to do was coach football. That's all I ever wanted to do in life. Actually, when I was working for Tiger Athletic Foundation after my second year, when the Washington, at the time they were the Redskins, when the Washington football team called me, I had just left Will Muschamp's office to figure out how to be a GA.
Hmm.
Like, I was going to coach. And so I also didn't plan to play 13 years.
Yep.
And I had a son who's about to be in high school. I didn't want to miss those things. And so I just, like, I sent out a tweet one day. I was like, bro, they finna kick me out the league at some point. I need an internship. And Trey Wingo DMs me. And he's like, you should just intern here.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, do y'all do that? He was like, nah, but they probably do it for you. And so that's the year San Francisco, Baltimore play here, so for the
uh-huh.
Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
I drive down to work on to do NFL Live, a little interview, and Trey's like, come with me. Takes me to meet Seth Markman, who's my boss now, and goes, Ryan wants to do an internship. And he's like, seriously? It's like, yeah. I was like, I want to do it for real, though. Because you would go, and they basically have somebody hold your hand and walk you around mm-hmm. the entire building. So I did it, you know, I got my emails, I got myself around, I did all those things. And I was like, this wasn't bad, it's pretty good. Like, I was okay. And that next week, like, these agents started hitting me up. And one of them was like, we think we can make you, like, the first person to ever get a contract while still playing.
Hmm.
I say, so what you're saying is, I'm going to get more money on top of the money I already make playing football to talk about football. That's what you're telling me. And he's like, yeah.
It's a good deal.
I was like, sign me up. And so that was kind of, you know, that was kind of how it happened. I can be honest, I didn't necessarily love it at first. You know, some of us, and not all of us, but some of us get to have like the job that's our passion. That was football, mm-hmm. right? Like I never necessarily knew it was going to be my occupation, but if I could have picked one, that's the one you pick, the one that you would have done for free. And so at first, it was kind of finding my place in a world of people that aren't like me, you know? And so it really was getting opportunities to do shows like Get Up and being in places where they made sure or they understood that like being me was okay. It was cool, you know? Like when you're the dude in 2016, when the world is very different, that wears a Colin Kaepernick jersey 2 weeks after he kneels, you're seen and treated a certain way. Whereas people, you know, whereas people who were watching Mike and Mike that morning, there were some people who respected the fact that I stood on that, respected the fact that I was like that. But you got to remember where society was at that time, right? Society didn't accept him. And so now you're this dude that's on TV who is mostly broadcasting to people who disagree with that stance, and you've taken that stance, right? Wearing that jersey, they for sure knew I wasn't saying he was my favorite quarterback, mm-hmm. right? They understood why I was doing mm-hmm. it. And so you fast forward that, you take that from 2016, Cody, when literally, bro, they would have questions about certain things in production meetings, and I would give my answer, and their reply would be, "You're not going to say that on TV, are you?" And I was like, "Hell yeah." And they'd say, "We're not going to ask you." Right? Because they had to save me for me, sure. but also do the right thing for the network.
Sure.
Whereas you fast forward that to 2020, and whether it's me saying it or other people, I was the most powerful voice on ESPN for that the entire year. Mm-hmm. Right? But that's because times changed, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, my stance was what it was then, and it's what it is now. And that's what made me start to kind of fall in love with TV, because I fell in love with having an opportunity to be myself, but also speak for people who don't get to speak and talk about things other than this dude through a nice nine route.
You lead me perfectly to one thing I wanted to ask you about, and I want to get back to maybe some of the self-improvement, the things that you do to try to get better and stay on top of your game. But I want to sink in on this while we're here in talking about this subject. You have a platform. You've always had a platform in some form or fashion. You know, at LSU, it was one thing. The NFL, it was another thing. On ESPN, it's another thing. How have you thought about the responsibility throughout your life that you've had with your platform, how you use it? Because you're right. In 2016, wearing a Kaepernick jersey was salacious. That was controversial. If you wore one now, there's a lot of people that do that now. There's a lot of people who take a knee during the anthem now. It's far more acceptable now in the public eye than it was in 2016, whether or not you agree with it. It's more common now. You see athletes all over the place do it. It happens in the NFL. But you've had a platform. And have you been a guy, you know, are you sitting there in 2016 saying, I've got a platform, I have a responsibility to stick up for it? Or is it just, hey, I'm Ryan and I'm going to
be
myself?
Yeah, you know what, man? I don't know. I kind of just do me. To be honest, like, you don't necessarily, I'm starting now because I was me, right? I'm starting now to understand my responsibility, right? Before, honestly, Cody, my responsibility was to my family and to myself, you know? And I was very honest when I wore the Kaepernick jersey, when I would be asked, would I have been a guy that would have kneeled? I was very honest. I said, probably like year 1 through 6, Ryan Clark, probably not.
Yeah.
Right? Because that guy doesn't know, like, even though I was a starter, I played really well, I'd gotten to my second contract, that guy doesn't really know how much a team needs him there or how important he is. That guy still has to go in camp and fight for positions and prove every year he deserves a start. The dude after that, hell yeah, I would have, right? Because I understood, like, my worth as a player. I understood what I had done for my family, the position I had put us in, and I wouldn't have been as worried about what the consequences of that decision would have been. But I had to. But like those two people still thought the same.
Yeah.
Right? I still felt the same way, but I also had a responsibility to my family, in turn myself. And so, you know, when I wore the jersey, it was the discussion in my house. with my wife, you know, okay, babe, if I do this, how do you feel? We do understand that this could be something where they say, you know, I was insubordinate in some way at work, or I did something I wasn't supposed to do. I could lose my job. And she was like, you know, you got to do what you want to do. You got to do what you think is best for you and for us. But she was like, I support you 100%. She felt the same way. And so then, though, like, once you put your neck out there that way, that's when the responsibility comes. Right? Like, if you're a person...
You set the bar.
Yeah, if you're a person who never has, then you do what the hell you want.
Yep.
Like, people might be waiting on you to say it, but as long as you're not saying anything that opposes it, right, you're just kind of in the middle of, then people let you be. Like, now, right, there are questions asked of me. Like, people want to know. But it's two-sided, though, in the sense that I can't be, like, I can't be the dude that always has an issue. Because honestly, everything's not always race.
Yeah.
Right? Or everything's not always wrong. Like, some things are right.
Yeah.
And when they're right, like, you got to be able to say that. Right? Like that's the true platform. Right and wrong. Right? Not gender. Not sexuality. Not race. Right? It's just right and wrong.
Yeah.
And as long as you stand on what you feel is right and you got a reason for feeling that way, then you can do it. And that's, to me, that's my platform. Like, that's the platform I'm responsible to. I'm not responsible to a certain group of people, right? I'm responsible to what I believe is what God would have us to do.
Hmm.
And so as long as you do that, man, I think the pressure is off a little bit. But, you know, I can say, like, you know, you go back to Chad Wheeler, right? Which is one of the very few things I regret about TV. Right. So, you know, Chad Wheeler beats his girlfriend. And obviously in that time, I'm getting a lot of tweets from African-American followers. Right. Like, why haven't you said anything? No, you know, you're involved in the media. I understood why we weren't talking about it, because nobody knows who the hell Chad Wheeler is.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's truly what it was. The NFL is against domestic violence for sure. Right. They're going to punish him. But media wise, it's about what story people want to hear.
Yeah, they're also, you know, let me inject my two cents. Yeah. There wasn't much to say about it. He did something terrible, and that's not great television to go on and say, hey, this guy did something really bad, and we all think it was really bad, right? There is black and white, and then there's gray area. Gray area is better TV than, yeah. than and black and white. And so, this is right, right. This
and
is
so,
wrong.
And so, like, in the production meeting for Get Up, First Take, it was never brought up, and, like, I wasn't necessarily concerned with it, but I did understand me, right, being very vocal about social justice and being very vocal about racism, and him being a white athlete who had beaten his black girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, nearly to death. And so, but I kept trying to explain to people, right, like, that's my thing, bro. I don't mind being, like, disliked. I hate being misunderstood.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, if you came up to me and you, like, recalled something I said, and you perceived it or received it in the exact way that I meant it, and you go, and I think it's stupid, I'm 100% okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, you disagree with
sure.
me. Cool. But if the way you receive it is, like, totally not how I meant it, I have a problem with that.
Yep.
Because now you're judging me off something. And so I kept trying to explain to people, no, y'all, it's not that they don't care. And you know what they thought? Well, because it's a white guy. No, that's not it. It's because it's that guy.
Yeah.
Nobody, like, if that was Aaron Rodgers, bro, it would have led the show.
Sure.
And so I regretted not just saying something, just because I understood. Like, that was the day I understood, like, okay, people expect a certain thing from me.
Yeah.
And I regretted letting them down. But on the other side, I understood why it was like that.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm just going to go ahead and pivot to a completely different topic. There's no smooth segue from that. There are so many LSU guys on TV, and it's you, it's Marcus, it's Booger. It's kind of become a brand of its own, right? What do you attribute that to? Why did that come from this place? Is it just random dumb luck? Is it, you know, the individual talents of you particular guys? Is it you being on TV and Booger being on TV and some of these guys being inspired to to go the same route? Like, what do you pin that down to?
I feel like everybody wants to be on TV at some point.
Yeah, you're right. Every time I talk to a football player, seriously, and I'm like, hey, like, what do you want to do after this? They're like, I don't know, probably just be on TV, talk about football or something.
Yeah,
and no, I'm like,
I feel like you're in the right place, I guess. I feel like everybody wants to do it. I don't think people understand how hard it is, you know. And now, because I'm still so involved with a lot of, whether I train an athlete or I've met them through some sort of camp, a lot of them ask me about it, like, what was your major, you know, and how did you get into it? Like, what would you say to work on? I think Booger, one, Booger is just extreme. He's just extremely freaking intelligent. Like, yeah. I don't even know how, no other way to say it.
Yeah.
And you got to look at Booger. He also worked his way up in Tampa on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, people. Yeah, like, people don't remember that. Like, people don't necessarily identify him with that. And then Marcus on SEC Network for 5 years before he got to that point. Mm-hmm. I think we're a mixed bag of people, right? Like, those two dudes, I'm going to say Marcus for sure. Marcus wants to be a TV star, right? And I love that about him. I don't, you know? Like, I remember the spring game when Coach O first started, he wanted to start bringing everybody back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of the rare times I'm on the field. Marcus like, so what do you want out of this? I was like, man, I just really love sports, bro. And I think it's dope that you can, like, hang with your homeboys and talk about it on TV.
Yeah.
I was like, I think that's cool.
Yeah.
And Marcus was like, I want to be a TV star. I was like, I absolutely do not. You know? And he goes, well, what the hell you do it for? I was like, I just told you. Like, I enjoy that. Yeah. I enjoy talking. I was like, bro, I'm going to watch every game anyway. So if I'm going to watch them all, why not just study them and go make money talking about it,
yeah.
You know? And so I think that's what's great about those two is, like, they inspire me in the sense that, like, they're so different. Like, Marcus has so much personality, and he's, like, the big dude, man, that everybody wants to be at the family reunion and wants to go to dinner with. And then Booger shows, like, the other side of people from here. It's like, man, dudes that go to LSU can just be extremely intelligent.
Yeah.
They can be really learned. And so I think that's what's dope about, you know, having us three. I want to say we had somebody in baseball as well.
Yeah, we got a few. Yeah, Ben McDonald does a bunch of stuff.
Ben McDonald, you know what I'm saying?
Baseball. I mean, they're all over the place. There's too many to count, like, in every sport.
I think that's cool. And, you know, I think it's something about being from here and the personalities of the people.
Yeah.
You know, like, Marcus, like, his personality is infectious. Like, you want to be around him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a guy like Jamal coming up will probably, when he's retired,
for sure,
have an opportunity to be involved. One, because he's a superstar.
For sure.
Two, though, he has the same type of personality. He's so intelligent. And it's been cool to kind of be a part of it. But you can even go Marlon Favorite, bro, Jacob mm-hmm. Hester, just mm-hmm. all these dudes doing really good jobs.
Yep, at every level. And it's, you know, some guys want to be on ESPN, some guys want to be on the radio here. It's finding your level. I want to get Marcus on here at some point because I've heard stories about how you went to Tommy Karam and was like, hey, like, I want to be on TV. What do I need to do? And, like, and I'm sure he did that with a lot of people. I'm sure he reached out to everybody he could to try to learn from. And so I'd love to get him on and talk about it. Let's wrap up with this, because I can talk as long as I can write. You know how long I can write for.
Bro. Jeez, oh, Pete.
Let's not go there. We can be here all day talking about it. I wanted to end off with just what's next for you with ESPN. I saw you're getting a new show. You know, let everyone know what the new content is coming from you and what this new deal means.
Yeah, man. So it's a cool deal. Obviously, like, once other people get involved and they start inviting you and saying, okay, look, we want to make you a host of a show, then you kind of have some bargaining tools. And, like, one thing I say is, like, I want a home. Like, I want a place where people know who like me and who enjoy my type of content, where they can find me. And so they gave me a new pilot on ESPN Plus. And since you're talking about Marcus, I kind of told Matt Moscona a little bit about it yesterday. I want to do something with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be honest, bro, since I've been working there, pretty much anybody who's wanted to kind of do their own show has approached me as, like, being with them.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I want to do a podcast. You want to do it? And they're like, no, I don't want to work. You know, so I was like, that's real work. I don't want to work.
Yeah.
But we're going to do something. Like, I want to do something with him. I don't kind of really have, like, the exact format, because obviously ESPN be a part of it. But, you know, I took it from, like, what I told him on the field. Like, I just want to talk ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what the name of it is going to be. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I love to talk ball with you. And I was watching David Letterman's My Next Guest Is mm-hmm. on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, everybody seems really freaking relaxed
yeah.
when they do this. And so we're actually, I'll probably be reaching out to you soon. We're actually going to shoot like a pilot or just an episode of it here. You know,
nice.
Like we're going to walk around and kind of just talk about, you know, how we got to this point. Find somewhere that's very uniquely my dream place to do it. Ruffin was a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Would be at Ruffino. So we can kind of talk about that. But just talk about kind of how we're doing. Talk about our journeys in football. Talk about our upbringings in Baton Rouge on the West Bank and what LSU was to us and kind of some of the responsibilities we feel being from here, our careers, what they were, and where we are now. And that's basically what I want it to be. Like, I want it to be a place where we don't come learn that Cody can write a 5,000-word speech for a video that's supposed to be 5 minutes, you know? Like, I do want to know that you wanted to go to Duke and that you were working to get there and that, you know, you rode at Tiger Rex. Like, I want to know all those things.
Yeah.
And, okay, and here Cody is today. Because if you get the right guests and you're dealing with the right people, they're going to know who you are today.
Yeah.
But so many times people don't understand what made that, mm-hmm. right? What got you there. And I get to talk like X's and O's every day. I don't want to do that all the time. Like, I just want to like hang out with my friends, drink Malbec, and, you know, talk a little ball.
Sign me up. I'll watch it. I mean, that's what it's about, right? It's about making the human connection, you know, with someone else like me and you're doing here, but also with somebody listening. You know, somebody's going to listen to that part about Duke and be like, oh, Cody loved Duke. What a, you know, what a tool or whatever. But then somebody else can be like, you know what? I love Duke too. And like, this is what I remember about it. So it's about making
You know what the cool part about that is though, Cody? If they call you a tool for loving Duke, that's what the world thought.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
sure.
But that connects too.
Yeah.
Like that was the part, like that's the part I had to learn, bro. It's like, everybody's not going to like it.
Yeah.
Right. Kanye, who's going slap ASS crazy now. Right. Has a line. And it's one of my favorite lines of all time. He says, everybody feels a way about Ye, basically saying like people like me or they love me. He's like, mm-hmm. but at least they feel something.
Yeah.
Like that's like I always tell people, like people are always like, oh, you hate Carson Wentz. I was like, nah, he said it's like it's worse. I was like, I nothing him. You know, like mm-hmm. I have no feeling toward mm-hmm. him ever. Like, when I watch him, it's purely what he does.
Yeah.
And if it's great, I'm going to be like, man, that is great.
Yep.
And if it's bad, I can be like, that is bad because I don't have anything. But that's what you want, man. Like, you want that connection. Like, no matter what I say, it's so important to you that what I said, that whether you hate it or you love it, it made you feel something.
Yeah.
That's the job.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I'll tune in whenever it's Aaron. Let me know. Love to watch it. Appreciate your time today, as always.
No doubt, man.
And thank you for joining us.
Appreciate you, bro.